You bring any gym gear?
Oh, yeah, I've got my kit, yeah. You?
Yeah.
Oh, what have you bought?
Full Lycra bodysuit.
Stuff it.
With studs on the inside.
For your own pleasure. That's so selfish.
That's me, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. No mankini.
No. That's so...
So 90s.
2010, whenever it was that I wore it.
I've never been able to unsee it.
I'll tell you what, standing backstage at NEC in a mankini, knowing that, like, how many people was it out there?
12,000, something like that.
Something ridiculous. Yeah, that took some... if you'll forgive me, that took some balls.
Can I just say...
That mankini took some balls.
It hid some. That's...
If I ran too quick, it twanged some as well.
I'll tell you what, run the titles.
Hello. Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast with me, Jason Bradbury.
And me, Susie Perry.
Okay, we're going to dive straight in, Susie, if we can. Some questions and requests from you lot.
Yes, so Gareth Ross got in touch on Instagram and he asks, what's the strangest / most complicated challenge performed on the show? Now, there was a lot of setups and all kinds of different gaming things that we did, but one that springs to mind for me in terms of setup and safety and terror was us jumping off a bridge in Barcelona.
Yeah, with the first generation.
Testing, yeah, exactly, the iPhone.
And the N95, Nokia.
And the Nokia N95. And we thought, didn't we, as well, when they told us, because they tricked us a little bit, because they rang me up. So we want you to do this bridge jump. Jason said he's going to do it. So, of course, I'm straight away, I've got to say yes. But he hadn't even rung you. So then he rings you. He goes, I've just spoke to Susie. We're going to do a bridge jump. She's up for it. So, of course, you were like, yeah, no problem. And you, I remember you being so full of, you'll be all right, full of bravado. In fact, it's even on the piece to camera. Yeah. I'm really terrified.
Yeah.
And you're saying, you'll be fine,
I'll
you'll
be fine.
Love.
Don't sweat it.
I don't want to do this.
I know. You'll be all right.
And underneath was a load of rocks.
Yeah. And there was just one carabiner.
Yeah. And I'm standing
between
there.
Between two of us.
And I remember them saying, are you all right? And I just went, no. Because I just wasn't all right.
I'm not all right.
And normally, I just say yes to everything and I do everything. And afterwards, I'm like, I can't believe I did that. Yeah. But I really didn't want to do it. And you knew that. And you've been quite sweet and everything. But off you went to the opposite side of the bridge. And we, you know, 3, 2, 1. I had a tear rolling down my face because my body was going, don't do it. You've got a lovely life.
Yeah.
Don't jump.
Why threaten it?
What are you doing for a phone?
Yeah, for a phone.
So we jumped off.
Yeah.
I did this, like, pathetic jump. But anyway, I jumped. You jumped. We did the challenge. And obviously the physical buttons won. We knew that was going to happen. Took us down to the ground. I was so relieved. I was like, oh, thank God.
Oh, my God, I know what you're going to say.
Thank God. And then I heard Ewan and I heard him go, oh, sorry, we're going to have to do it again. We didn't get your shot. And I thought, that's so funny. Yeah, la, la, la. Yeah. And he went, no, seriously.
Serious.
We didn't get you jumping off the bridge. So we had to do it again. But the second time we did it, you nearly bottled it, do you remember?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't any easier the second time.
I was terrified. I was terrified. And having done it, I then knew how terrifying it was. And doing it again was like, oh, that was off the table.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. Look at me. You all right?
No.
3, 2, 1, go!
Also, while I'm on a bit of a roll about stuff and being scared, how many times did I go to hospital? Quite a few, I seem to remember.
It was like every second episode, wasn't it?
Pretty much. I ended up with a quad bike on me at one point.
Yeah,
that was heavy.
Yeah.
There was a couple of crashes with you and me and bikes.
Yeah.
Still got the big scar on my knee, stitches, concussion.
Oh, shit! Slow, slow, slow! Christ.
Ow. I think you might have actually pushed me off my bike on one of those.
I think maybe I was a little too competitive.
Bit too competitive.
Yeah.
Definitely went head over heels because your hand was in my back. Yeah.
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 But no,
do you want to see the stitches that you caused?
No, I don't.
Do you want to see the scar?
No, because in my mind, I've expunged all that stuff and I was just a really nice guy.
Right.
It was just really easy to hang out with and easy to work with.
Yeah. So they were quite difficult days.
Yeah.
Because all the pain that I endured.
I've got one here for you from John A. Ferguson. I don't know what the A stands for. He got in touch on Twitter, which I would have called X.
Just call it Twitter.
Had my own son not told me that that made me sound like an old man. And he said, saw you using Rode equipment.
I'm
on it right now. Mm-hmm. Podcasting has become something that so many people want to try. So a feature on the latest podcast equipment and software, especially for those on a budget. Give it a go when you both have a chance.
Well, thank you for that, John, because we are actually going to, we are planning now to do a podcasting equipment piece in an episode very soon.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah, so thank you for that suggestion. Watch this space. So we're going to do that.
And someone whose request we can fulfill right now in this very episode is Richard Wikes, one of our Patreon subscribers. Hey, you get the golden thumb. How about guest appearances from former presenters? We could ask what their favourite, funniest, scariest item thingy to do on the show was. I like it.
Well,
good.
Richard, we like that idea so much that this week's guest is a very lovely and ridiculously clever, boffin-y gadget show presenter.
Yes.
And he's standing over in the corner studio right now. He's blushing a little bit.
He's waving at
us. It's hard to see him because of all his hair. That's a clue. We won't reveal who he is.
But I'll give you some clues. He's an expert on space. AI, inventions and future tech. So we'll be right on this podcast. I can't wait to get him over it and pick his brains.
But first of all, I believe that you, Jason Bradbury,
yes,
has got a gadget for me, Suzanne Perry.
I have. Bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
Susie, close your eyes.
Oh, not again. Eyes closed, right?
Just stay there.
Jace?
Keep them closed, darling.
Well, where is it? Have you not got it next to you?
Okay, Susie, right, I'm just going to prep, all right?
I've still got my eyes shut.
Yeah, I know, I'm trusting you to do that. I'm just getting you ready, all right? I think this is looking pretty good. Right, if you come and join me on my right hand side... Oh, no, you can't, because you're there, aren't you?
Can I open my eyes or not?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm now putting the MetaQuest 3 headset on your face. Is that comfy-ish?
Oh, yeah, that's comfy.
Come and join me to my right. Can you see me?
Yeah.
Now, where is the ping pong table? Is it here?
Oh, there it is.
Is it there?
There's a cat.
There's a cat.
I'm playing against a cat.
With a VR helmet on. Okay, play ping pong.
What? How do I?
Exactly like that. I wanted to show you how impressive the physics are on this very affordable piece of VR technology from Meta, as opposed to the Apple Vision Pro that isn't that affordable. Also, the other thing, the Vision Pro that we featured in our first episode of this great podcast, is that it doesn't feature controllers, whereas the MetaQuest 3 has, as Susie's demonstrating.
Badly, really badly.
What Susie's doing now, she's in a MetaQuest headset right now. The cameras are surrounding her. She can see me. Can you see how many fingers am I holding up?
Five.
How would you say the full colour pass-through compares to the clarity of the pass-through on the Vision Pro?
No, it's slightly different in that it's slightly more cartoon-like.
It is a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit more... Hang on, cat.
Yeah.
Wait.
She's a bit keen, isn't she?
Yeah, stop it.
She's playing against the disembodied head of a cat.
Just a head of a cat.
With the VR helmet on. Yeah.
So it is a bit more...
It's a bit low res, isn't it?
A bit low res, that's good. It looks like you're filtered.
Yes.
And slightly...
Shimmery.
Little sort of soft.
Yeah, as opposed to the Vision Pro, which is, you almost can't tell the difference between reality
and eyes. No, that's true.
Yeah, it's that clarity that it's become famous for.
I think with the Vision Pro, I really felt like when we were looking at that dinosaur, for example, that it wasn't a film, it was actually in the room.
And yes,
it was coming
it's so
over me.
In that sense,
I was so immersive, I was enveloped by it. Whereas this feels a little more cartoonesque.
Yeah, there's a bit of an uncanny valley where you've got to sort of just enter into the spirit of it. But it's not bad, is it?
Like, no,
for example, if I stand up and you want to high-five me, you can high-five me.
Yeah.
It's real time. There's no delay with the virtual objects.
Oh!
Yeah.
Did you see what I just did?
I did see what you just did.
I thought I was going to lean on the table.
You did! You did!
I'm such a moron!
No, you're not. That is a very, very natural thing to happen. So what Susie's saying there is that she wanted to lean on the table, which she's been playing on. She's so immersed in the virtuality that she mistook it for reality.
Exactly, that's what I did. I went to pick up the ball and I went to lean with my left hand on what I thought was a table. Of course, there's absolutely nothing there.
Yeah. That's extraordinary. I'm really pleased that happened. That happens
that's
a lot.
Interesting.
It's actually,
isn't it?
In reality, it's one of the reasons why there are lanyards on your controllers. Because there are safety issues with VR helmets. When, as they become much more close to reality, we have to think a bit more about making sure that things like that don't happen and people don't fall flat on their face. All right, so see, you want to take the heads off? Sit down? Is that all right? Come on, take it off, yeah? Oh, bless you. Disappointed, aren't you?
Oh. I like the cat.
Welcome back to Grim Reality, Susie. Thank you so much. What did you think?
Well, I really am glad that I've got to try that because I really wanted to see what it was like after that whole Mark Zuckerberg incident when he went on the internet and talked about how much better it was and how much cheaper it was than Apple Vision Pro. And obviously, we started our podcast, didn't we, looking at the Apple Vision Pro.
We did. We started with the creme de la creme, the money is no object. And what's important to realise is why he got excited. I think because he recognised that actually his wasn't just cheaper. He, in his own view, he thinks it's better.
He thinks it's better. Now, there are obviously differences.
Yeah, let me know what you think.
Well, let's talk about what it looks like, first of all. Jason's bought all three MetaQuest headsets in, one, two, and three. So I'm just going to describe.
This one, the number one, is so old, it was called the Oculus Quest.
That's right.
Because they bought the Oculus technology. And then from the Quest 2, it became MetaQuest.
From two, they went white, didn't they?
So correct.
That was the big sort of visual difference between the two. So we've got, that's in white. So MetaQuest 3 is white once again. And you've got the same kind of look on the front of it, but you've got the three cameras in the front.
Yeah, I mean, we say there are three cameras. There's lots of different sensors in there.
Yeah.
That enable you to sense the objects in the room and make a convincing job of replicating reality.
I think in terms of the size, it's probably similar, the way it looks, like a big phone. I would say it's about that size, isn't it? I
mean, yeah, it's probably lacks a bit of girth over the Quest 2. It's a little slimmer than the Quest 2, the number 3.
Yeah, and it is quite immersive, although that I think you can a little bit see it outside peripheral vision, can't you?
Yeah.
Which takes away from the immersion a little bit.
Yes.
But if you're playing a game that you're into, I don't think you even kind of notice that, really.
Well, I mean, you said that thing where you started to lean on the table. I'll tell you what I've done. I drink tea throughout the day, all right? Mm. And sometimes I'll take my tea and I'll put it on the coffee table and I'll play a game in my Quest 3. And on several occasions, I've put the glass on an object in the game.
Yeah.
The table tennis table being one of them, and just dropped it on the floor.
Yeah, so it just goes to show that your brain, within, what was it, 90 seconds?
Yes.
Thinks, I thought there was a table tennis table there.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
I found it lighter to wear and very secure.
Yeah, I mean, partly, I have to say, that's got the Bobo VR extra add-on strap.
Yeah.
Which comes with a battery on the back. You've got extra power, blah, blah, blah. So I've added a bit of a posh headset add-on, but it really doesn't make that much difference.
I think in terms of what it looks like, you could describe it as, in comparison to the Apple Vision Pro, more lo-fi. It does look a bit more...
It's a bit more plasticky.
It's a bit more plasticky.
Yeah, it is.
But it's lighter and you kind of forget about it as soon as you get into a game.
You
as
know,
well,
some of the
hard...
All the top-end Apple stuff is a bit jewel... It has a jewellery thing going on.
It does.
There's something precious.
It's luxurious. It feels expensive.
Yeah, when you take your iPhone out of the case... You can just sometimes I just look at it. It's just a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
The chrome and the backing and the way that they do sort of matte black and things like that. But and there's none of that going on with that device,
no.
The MetaQuest 3, is there?
No. No.
It's white, it's got the three goggle eyes on the front, which are the cameras and the depth sensors. But what that means is that they can make it
cheaper for
a lot, seven times less than the Vision Pro.
Yeah. And the experience was just fantastic. I mean, what blew my mind really was when I went to lean on the table. And that, you know, I wasn't making that up. I was talking to you. I wasn't concentrating on anything, just living it, and then thought I could lean on nothing.
Do you know what I do? Because the pass-through is so good now, compared to, say, the Quest 2 that I'm holding in my hands right now, which is also white, one of the things that I think old Zuckerberg got excited about, and I do agree with him here, is the library of content. Now, you were getting quite out of breath playing that and quite into it, right? Because you were properly throwing your weight around, right? And... Can you imagine? There are fantastic workout games. You know about Beat Saber, the famous Beat Saber. There are a lot of experiences. There's productivity experiences, horror games, more sort of AAA titles, adventures, board games.
So how does the MetaQuest 3 differ from the MetaQuest 2, keeping it in the family?
It's all about resolution. I mean, it's just got a much clearer image. So
just it improves your experience,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, it does. It is noticeably an upgrade. But the big difference is the pass-through, which is this...
What do you mean by that?
Okay, so you know when you put it on and you could still see me?
Yes.
And you could see the microphones, yeah, and you could see...
So you're in the room, but you're with all the additional...
It's real time. It's not some delayed, laggy view of the real world. It's almost like you can see straight through the plastic, right? And that's full colour, or it's colour. It's not glorious colour, isn't it? You said it was a bit lo-fi. Yeah, and as opposed to Vision Pro, which has a much wider colour gamut and gives you a much more realistic comparison to what it would
more
look like
crisp,
with your own eyes.
I yeah. would say.
But it's black and white on the Quest 2.
So that's a big difference,
isn't
it?
It's a big difference. If you're playing, say, a board game and you've got characters like Dungeons and Dragons, you can place them on your coffee table and you can still see your coffee table. You can see your mom sat across on the sofa and the person that you're playing with, your sister or whatever, you can see them all and you can interact with them and they can interact with you, whether they're wearing headsets or not. You can see people in the room and assets. And you can use parts of the room, furniture and stuff in the gaming experience to a certain extent. So that requires colour, and that's what the Meta Quest 3 offers above and beyond the other Quests. Now, one of the things that Apple have been pushing is this idea of a new way of working. Okay, so they call it spatial, don't they? This notion that you can have spatial computing. That's a phrase that they've pushed. In fact, they don't like the Vision Pro being referred to as a VR helmet. They really, really push back on that. Spatial computing is about seeing the real world, maybe your MacBook in front of you, and then extending the screen, extending your workable spaces, opening up a TV over here, a PowerPoint or whatever the keynote would be, I guess, if you're an Apple user, a display over there, and then having a kind of virtual office. Interestingly, Meta really pushed that. That was one of the things that they were really keen to go with. They didn't call it spatial computing. They called it something else. I don't know. But I don't know if it works so well, because I think that is something that requires a really high quality. If you're going to live in it for 6 hours and you're going to do, I don't know, write notes or write a document based on surfing the internet, you want that highest visual clarity, don't you?
Of course you do. Of course you do.
But if you're jumping about with a laser in each hand, hitting, you know, cubes as they come towards you in the musical track, or fighting off zombies or climbing a mountain, then I'm sure you'll agree, having done that, the Meta Quest 3, at what is it, 500 quid or thereabouts, a very affordable piece of kit, it's more than adequate to, you know, completely get your hook, line and sinker into that virtual space.
Yeah, amazing.
Another difference to note is, of course, from the Apple Vision Pro, is that you've got the controllers. And the controllers not only give you that exact representation of your hand position, because they've got all kinds of sensors in there and interacting with the headset, you're also holding something. So when you're holding an actual weighted device in your right hand and you've got a pretend bat in the virtual world, it feels like a bat. And when you hit the ball, you get a little pulse, you get the tactile feedback. And that's just ping pong. What if you're holding a big broadsword or you're shooting a weapon and it recoils and then you run out and you clip a magazine in and you pull the stock or whatever it's called? You get all of that sensory feedback from these devices. And you don't get that on the Apple Vision Pro. It's just your hands.
I feel like they're for two different things, really. I don't know if I'm right in saying...
Well, Apple would agree with you.
I think Apple, if you're using it as a virtual office for your work, for looking and
movies.
Watching things,
yeah.
movies, yeah. Anything like that, where you want that quality, that crisp quality of colour and clarity, I would choose the Apple,
yeah,
the Vision Pro. But for playing games and for having fun...
And fitness.
And fitness, anything like that, where it wasn't the clarity that you really, really needed, then it's surely this. Now, at the start of this podcast, we promised you a very bright and lovely former Gadget Show presenter would be our guest this week, and we were not lying.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to our little gadgety roundtable a man who never has and never will have to worry about hair loss.
It's true.
Ladies and gentlemen... It's Mr. Dallas Campbell!
I have other medical things to worry about.
Don't we all, Dallas?
You know, we could talk about those. Our middle-aged ailments.
You've got middle-aged.
That's not what I expected you. No, I didn't expect you to open up with that.
I'm just saying. Hair loss isn't one of them.
I didn't expect that.
Do you want to share anything else with us before we kick in?
Well, we'll carry on, and maybe at the end I could talk about you know.
Prostate.
Yeah. God, no, I like
that.
Honestly.
I'll let you two talk about that.
But look, Dallas, that's not why you're here.
No. You spent
for a prostate examination.
Three series with us.
Yeah.
Over 1 year. Gosh, we did ever such a lot of filming in 1 year there, didn't we?
And not only that, but it was at a time. It was because the Gadget Show went through various phases, didn't it?
It did.
And you were here for the rock and roll phase. And I like to feel that you were a big contributor to that because you've always been a bit of a rocker and a roller.
It had a kind of punk rock vibe. And also,
yeah, it did.
It was interesting times as well because I remember the iPhone had just come out and the world changed suddenly. So I think
it did.
At that particular period, 2008, we underwent this revolution in a way.
Consumer gadgetry was king, wasn't it, really, then?
Yeah, yeah.
And no, it was a great time. So you were with us for a year, and then we know you went to the BBC.
We got poached by the BBC.
No, so well,
your show was your audition for BBC Science Stardom, wasn't
that's
it?
What
did
I
you
said.
Use us?
No, that's what I said. I'm still waiting for the call to turn up for the Gadget Show. I was just waiting. I just never got a call sheet the next week. So I just sat there with my arms folded for 15 years.
No, but seriously, you went on to do loads of great science programmes and adventure.
I did.
You've been all over the world with the BBC. So, you know, what was your sort of highlight after leaving us?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I went on, we did a show for BBC One, a science programme called Bangoes of Theory, which we did for a few years.
And it was a really great show.
It was a really good show. But all the things I did at the BBC were really just looking at how the world works. So we did lots of good science.
So you've done some, because that's your thing, isn't it? Future gazing and science. So when you were on the Gadget Show, if you can remember back for us, just have a think back. What was your favourite thing that you did or challenge or
there were, honestly,
moment?
That year, 2008, we did so much good stuff. Sorry, I can't speak. So many much good stuff.
We know.
I think it works. I like
that
it.
That kind of works. There was the Scalextric speed record, Chatsworth House, which was a highlight.
Do you know what? I remember that on a straight piece of track.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I remember it. And I remember the very tiny incremental changes that you made to your world record attempt car.
Yeah.
You know, what was like things like special magnetism?
Einstein's theory of general relativity, that kind of stuff, special relativity. We factored in everything.
And I remember watching it, but what happened?
We went really fast and we broke the record.
You got a Guinness World Record.
And we know that because
I have that here, your certificate. Have you not got this?
No.
So the fastest slot car was Scalextric Honda F1 replica, which reached a speed of 1583.4 scale kilometres per hour when it was controlled by Dallas Campbell,
that's
UK,
you.
Of the Gadget Show at the Chatsworth Rally Show, Chatsworth, UK, 6th of June 2008, ladies and gentlemen.
Am I allowed to, can I take it? I could photocopy or take a picture of it.
I'd nick off with
although
it.
Although, I don't know, because when I left, lovely Otis took over, and I think Otis redid it and secretly broke the record.
It
hasn't been officially recognised.
If
so
you
I'm gonna,
Google
I'm claiming
it, it's still you.
Is it?
So that
Good.
Means it's when we speak to Otis, we'll say something different.
Yeah, okay. Obviously, yeah. Google is the arbiter
that's
of it.
Great, look at that.
Look at that. Let's put that up here while you're...
That's nice.
Just put that there that, for
I,
you.
We did a lot of. I did a lot of future-gazing kind of things. I remember doing robots and exoskeletons in America.
Like that octopus or jellyfish thing that
robot
you did as
jellyfish
well.
We did. But it was sort of the early days. If we think about robotics now and how robotics and AI are changing everything, it was just before that explosion. Actually, you know the best film I ever did?
What was the best film you ever did?
It was with you, and it was we were in Birmingham City Centre, and funnily enough, a chap, can't remember his name now, sent me a picture of it the other day. It was you and me doing karaoke.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
I had to do some breakdancing. That was fun.
I seem to remember we had to chuck water over televisions as well, because it was kind of party gadgets generally.
It was to get a party going, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. So we had karaoke machines.
I can't remember, because it was the Gadget Show and that's what we did.
Anyway,
amazing memories, though.
It was good.
And a great example of what we used to do on the show, which wasn't just review stuff.
No.
We'd create narratives and experiences and we'd live with things for weeks. And I loved that about the show.
And all the challenges we did, the wild challenges I remember so fondly. We'd go off to Ponister Slate Mine and
I remember you stole some of my clothes.
I still have some of your clothes. Sorry, that sounds really dodgy.
It's all right. Don't explain.
I've got a pair of.
Yep. Let's move on.
Okay.
Have you got them on?
No, but I know where they are.
Okay. You've also been doing a podcast on inventions. What a gear change that was.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I have.
You've done about 150 million of them.
Well. Yeah, and again, it's about inventions and really inventions. we're a broad church on patented. We do the big inventions, the, you know, the invention of the steam engine and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But then we do much more niche things as well. So we like to play around with things.
Yeah, that's been fun, hasn't it?
It's been really fun. It's fun.
And so in terms of future gazing, have you still got an eye on that?
Absolutely.
Have you got anything to share
with everything us? Everything I do has always been a little bit about that, a little bit about what's coming around the corner, and it's particularly space. And I write a lot about human spaceflight and the history of that and
I mean, where that's going. That's gone in such an incredible way since we were last working on the show.
Absolutely.
Can you believe NASA have kind of effectively handed over to SpaceX and is it Blue Origin, the other one?
Blue Origin, exactly.
I mean, who'd have thought that? It's incredible.
Well, 2007, 2008, there was kind of nothing happened. It was the end of the shuttle. Things like going into space was absolutely the sole preserve of big government. So America did it, Russia did it, and that was kind of it.
It's so expensive. Europeans did
it. It's really expensive. Yeah. But actually what happened was this idea of actually having reusable boosters. So, you know, in the old days, it would be a bit like going to space, a bit like flying to New York and then just setting fire to the plane when you landed in New York. You know, it didn't work economically. But now, of course, we've got reusable rockets thanks to SpaceX, and it's just revolutionised everything. And that's really interesting.
Well, what is going to happen though? What, you know, because you hear about people going casually, I'm going to go on holiday up to Mars or
wherever. There's that. But actually, the thing that interests me is more. You can go and,
I'm not going.
I don't want to go to Mars.
No, nor me.
Yeah. Mars,
No, there's not a lot going on, is there?
There's not
much. No Wi-Fi. It's not a great atmosphere, is there?
Thinking of Russ Abbott then.
No one's going to Mars.
No one's going to Mars. Well, not in my lifetime. I mean, people bang on about going to Mars.
Right, we're a long way off. Where are people going, though?
Well, at the moment, we're going to low Earth orbit still, because the International Space Station is still there. And then possibly the moon. Artemis, which is the legacy of Apollo, if you like. It's the new going back to the moon, but staying there. But we don't quite have all the architecture there yet. We've got rockets, Elon Musk's Starship, that beautiful, great silver thing. That is the thing that will land on the surface of the moon. But it's going to take a while. I mean, we're on flight 3 of that now, and it's still not.
And what flight will we be on when they actually nail it?
Well, crikey! I mean, this is the thing. These dates just keep slipping. When Donald Trump was president, he were like boots on the moon by 2024, and here we are.
And it felt achievable, right?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump.
But let me tell you something. One of the things I'm interested in is how technology drips down.
Yeah. What is the effect of all of this space?
Well, I was going to just pitch one. I wanted to just give you an experience that I had that it just blew my mind. For some people listening, it might just be really normal. But I went on a cruise ship at Christmas. It was a great cruise with the kids, blah, 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 blah. Met the chief engineer, was fan of the gadget show, showed us around. And we went upstairs and he showed me the old satellite receiver from which they used to get internet for the boat. And it was this enormous, great big, I think it was like a dome. It was massive, to the left of it, 6 little squares, tiny, almost like dinner plates, pizza boxes, and he said, that we don't use that anymore. And of course, it was Starlink.
Right.
Starlink's amazing.
And absolutely revolutionary. But again, it's a drip-down technology, isn't it, from the space race?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, what I'm interested in is actually how space affects everything on Earth. I mean, we call it Earth observation. Society and civilization would not be able to function as we know it without being able to put things in low Earth orbit. Everything we know about the climate, every time you do any banking, anything like that, uses satellites. And of course, satellites have got a lot smaller. So we're seeing this great new revolution in satellites, which really affect everything that we do. I mean, anything you can think of, we do because we can go into space now.
So it feels like this sort of separate thing where pilots go up to space, but actually it's a very ordinary part of most people's day.
And it is. Being able to see the Earth from space, even things like during the pandemic, we knew something was up because we could see the car park in the kind of Wuhan. And we're like, hang on, there's more cars there today. There's something going, you know, things like time stamping when you do your banking is there because of satellite technology. Mm. Things like kind of modern slavery, all kinds of things we can actually monitor from space because we can actually look at how land use is being used, which you just can't do on Earth. So, it's pretty amazing.
So Starlink.
Yes.
Because when you look up and you see them come over,
it's
quite a thing, isn't it?
You can see them with the naked eye.
Yeah, you can.
Starlink
is... explain what Starlink is.
It's Elon Musk's company, which basically has, rather than using the internet using pipes and cables that we use on Earth, actually using satellites. So he has various constellations of satellites which are in low Earth orbit, which gives internet to remote parts of the world. So wherever you are in the world now, you know, if you're on a cruise ship or if you're at the North Pole, you've got your little satellite...
transceiver.
Which is about the size of a pizza box.
It really is.
And it doesn't matter where you are, you can get high-speed...
proper bandwidth. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's good enough to play Fortnite.
And of course, there's all kinds of political issues with it, as we saw with Ukraine and Russia.
I was going to ask you about that.
And, well, again, it's really difficult. It's like, as a tech company, how involved should you get into political situations like that? But there's always that kind of balance between civilian and military.
Which is the same with DJI, isn't it? The drone company, the Chinese drone manufacturer, that are now effectively a weapons manufacturer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a true statement.
No, they absolutely. There's always that crossover. There's always that kind of bleeding in between civilian technology and military technology.
I suppose when it's owned by one person,
well,
that's where it starts to change a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All that power to one person.
Exactly.
What do you think of that?
What do I think of Elon Musk? Pardon me... You know, you've got to hand it to him. He's revolutionized the world in so many ways, not just access to space, but things like electric cars, so
solar
panels, the internet. And then you kind of get into Twitter and you kind of think, well, I don't know.
No, come on.
I'm a fan of Elon Musk.
A lot of people,
I understand why he pisses people off. I get it. I understand why people struggle with Musk. But
he's the nearest we've got to Tony Stark.
He's the nearest you got to Tony Stark or a kind of Edison, someone like that. I mean, what he's done is extraordinary.
It is absolutely extraordinary, absolutely amazing. I mean, where would we be without people like that? What we need really is we need two more. We need two more Elon Musks from different parts of the world with slightly different
politics. To level it out.
Where politics, we'd be, just probably, to balance everything out.
We'd probably be in about 2008 still, the kind of where we were with the Gadget Show back in 2008 is where we'd be.
It's extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. And also, crikey, what he's doing with AI, you know, he's with Grok.
Absolutely. He started OpenAI. So he was one of the founders of OpenAI.
Really, those are the two things that are going to change everything. Obviously, AI and synthetic biology are the two areas of technology.
And the combination of both.
And the combination of those. And the thing is, it's not like... they're going to be things. Everything that we do will be influenced by those things.
But Grok, of course, really is Elon Musk attempting.
I was going to say, just explain what Grok is.
Well, Grok is X's version of a large language model. So people will have heard of ChatGPT, a large language model. And there's a very good one. I think it's just finished. It was called Glasgow GPT, where it just swears at you. It's really, honestly, I was so happy when someone introduced me to Glasgow GPT. The thing that everyone's kind of worrying about is, are we going too fast? Do we have legislation in place?
Because the answer is no, we don't.
There's certain things that once it's out the box... And we're not at a point where, you know, people are talking about artificial general intelligence. And we're not at that point yet. But we may be in 5 or 10 years.
Let me tell you a chilling concept.
Yeah, tell me a chilling concept.
Oh, no, here we go.
I went to a cybersecurity conference recently. Okay. And one of the things that they said is on the dark web, there is a thing called Worm GPT. Crazy. And it's a large language model, natural language model that you go to and you say, create me a virus to infiltrate, Sony and steal email addresses or whatever it would be. You know, I'm not a hacker, so I clearly don't.
No, but this is why we keep on hearing about hacks, isn't it?
But you know, like you can go onto something like ChatGPT and very easily ask it to create code for a website, and it's incredible. Or you can create a game. I've done it. It works.
I use it all the time, and it's great.
Yeah, not just, you know, like give me some ideas for a new script for the Gadget Show podcast, obviously, but it can also do code. It can do code, it can do Python, it can do HTML, it can do JavaScript, but it can also do whatever it is that they use to create.
There's always a dark side.
Denial of service attacks and all the rest of it. Say it.
Yeah, there's always a dark side.
That's the thing. It's everything that's good will be better, and everything that's bad will be worse.
Just talk us through, you know, how AI could enrich our lives, and does.
Well, I mean, all the big things that we struggle with now, things like energy, things like climate change. The fact of the matter is, using something like AI means that things like climate models are going to become much more accurate because we'll be able to put more compute into them, if you like. things like energy. So all the big things like nuclear fusion, which historically has always been 20 years away, the idea of creating a tokamak or a laser fusion so you could have unlimited energy without all the problems of nuclear fission. And we haven't cracked it yet because we just haven't had the compute power to kind of work out how it works. So all those kind of big fundamental things are going to hopefully be solved by or helped along by AI, I think, in a revolutionary way.
What do you think about this? AI has a great democratizing effect.
Yes, that's a really good point. Really good point. Well, the fact of the matter is, something like an iPhone. So this came out when we, you know, in 2007, when we were doing the gadget. This came out. And the fact of the matter is, someone like Elon Musk or Kim Jong-un or Jason Bradbury, we all have the same gadget in our pocket. No one has an iPhone that's better than anyone else's iPhone. This is a kind of a democratizing thing. And AI, I think, will be the same. You will have in your pocket, on your phone or however you use it, a personal assistant, a lawyer, a creative help.
Muse.
A muse. All these things, an accountant. All these things that we'll all have the same thing. So it will be democratizing, I think. I think having that power will liberate us in lots of ways, as well as obviously deep fake porn.
I suppose the flip side of having an accountant, a lawyer, whatever it is in your pocket, in your phone, in the same way that we were, you know, talking about apps years ago, you'll have a map, you'll have it. In essence, is then people will say, well, what about jobs? How many people's jobs are going to go?
Every time there's been a revolution in technology, that conversation happened. When
always.
The printing press came along, and there was a scientist, actually, what was his name? Konrad Gessner. His name was. He was a Swiss scientist, and he was banging on. He was moaning on about this kind of always on technology, all this sort of information that's going to come. It's going to destroy people's jobs and da da da. And of course, he was writing in the 1600s, talking about the printing of books.
We manufacture scarcity, don't we? We've talked about it before on this podcast, in the context of streaming and how you could have all the episodes ready to go, but they hold them back, right? And in the same way, I think that the imperfect nature of humans will become more valuable, not less. And I'll give you a great case in point. In the 70s and 80s, they evolved the automated coffee machine. You get a decent cup of coffee, ground beans, ready to go, beautiful, right? Except it wasn't that good. There was no interpersonal relationship with the barista. There was no smell in the same way. There was no sense of place. And now, every morning, so many people in the UK and the US and Australia, we wait 15 minutes for generally a man with a tattoo and a beard or, you know,
a hipster
to make it. And it's all part of the experience.
Yeah, the drip coffee. Vinyl. There you go.
That's a great example, Suze. Mm. Exactly. You're a vinyl fan.
I'm a vinyl
girl.
I'm a drip coffee kind of girl.
Yeah.
I like all of that.
If you're a legal researcher, get out now. Okay, run, because the AI is coming for you. And it'll go back 100 years into the legal archives and it will find all the facts that are going to win the case for your client, right? Yeah. So get out now.
Well, I just wanted to say, all this amazing stuff we've been talking about the future, what I find really amazing is how quickly human beings get used to things. I'd heard of ChatGPT last year, and within 12 months, it's so normal, the fact that I'm using it for all kinds of things. I find that extraordinary.
Dallas, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my absolute pleasure. Yep. It's lovely to see you.
Hey.
Thank you, Dallas.
Thank you.
Good luck with the future gazing and the podcasts and the book writing and everything that you're doing. Come back anytime.
I will. Tomorrow?
Not here tomorrow.
She's not filming tomorrow.
Looking good, Susie.
Thank you very much. Urban Tigress.
Yeah, Wolverhampton Cougar.
Whatever.
That's what I call you.
Whatever, yeah.
So we're in workout gear, folks. And in case it wasn't obvious, that's because the next item I'm really excited to introduce my compadre to is a health device.
Great.
It's part of a whole new sort of subdivision of technology designed to make you fitter and stronger.
Right.
It's a smart gym.
Okay.
This one is called the Vitruvian Trainer Plus, and it's been blowing my mind for the last couple of months. So I'm interested to see what you think. Susie, let's get on up. Let's get onto the Vitruvian Trainer Plus and see what it's all about.
Okay. Right, come on then.
Okay.
So I'm standing on the Vitruvian. Yep. Is that right?
Correct.
So it looks kind of looks like a big step, really. Yeah. It doesn't like an aerobic step, obviously full of tech. And it's got this bar across it, which is connected.
Which is interchangeable, so there's a number of different bars and okay. devices that you can fit to it.
So the bar is attached with cables, which obviously go in and out, retract in and out. That's essentially what's happening, isn't it?
Yeah. It uses unique algorithms to enable magnetic resistance, namely weight, to various pieces of kit. You've got the bar there.
Mm.
It works using an app. Choose from over 200 exercises.
Right.
You can also invent your own, but yeah. 200 exercises. One of the things that you can do on it is you can go to a program and you've got a video instructor and they'll say, hey, let's do this, we're off, and they'll motivate you and they'll take you through maybe a strength assessment. The app will then record how you performed. It will then actively, using the algorithms, decide on a program that you maybe want to follow, but it's tailor-made to you. But what we'll do is we'll just choose an exercise. So biceps, we're going to do some curls. We'll choose that one. It's got fantastic LED lighting. I've set it at 5K. We'll see how this goes. What I'll say to you is that sort of magnetic resistance actually ends up being a bit heavier. So if you might be able to lift a 5K dumbbell, but this will feel a bit heavier.
Okay.
What you do is, okay, do a normal bicep curl. You can see this chap here showing you how to do it. You'll do three with no weight, and it'll just configure the machine to you and to your height. Should be no resistance there.
No.
Now these test your height, how far you're going to go down, so that it knows when to put in the power, which is now. Go for it.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can feel the pump. Now, important to mention is the programming on this is very sensitive. So if you're starting to fail at the end of your set, which often working to failure is a strategy, isn't it?
Yeah.
For building muscle. If you've got it set up in that way, it will sense that you're failing and it will delicately just take the weight down just a little bit, the resistance, so you can finish
the
set.
To let you finish.
So it's dynamic.
Okay.
So there you go. That total weight that you lifted was 5K. Calories consumed, 1.5. Duration, 16 seconds. It will keep this in the cloud. It'll give you goals based on how you performed. It'll constantly reassess your fitness so that it's like having a personal trainer who understands you, keeps notes, writes them down so that you can progress slowly, either using video or like we've done, just going straight in there and targeting a particular exercise. And just to give people at home that are listening to the podcast an important piece of information, it's low enough so you can slide it under the sofa, or you can slide it under some beds or under a wardrobe. So you can keep the whole thing, which would normally be a big rack device or a stack of weights with different weights and different
plates. And that's the great thing, isn't it? Because I've got loads of weights at home and you know, yoga blocks and stretch bands, and it ends up being quite a lot of stuff.
A lot of gubbins,
really?
And it ends up being quite expensive as well. Let me show you something else that it's got, that you can just jump off there.
Yep.
So I'll show you some of the other pieces of kit that you've got here. Okay, you've got handles, you've got this. I don't know what this is called, but I use them at the gym. Really good for bicep work.
It's a sort of split rope, isn't it, that you can use for your backs of your arms. And
so I'm putting a bench onto the Vitruvian now. This bench will work in a number of different configurations. I'm going to do three sets of six reps at 20 kilograms. So I do that and I hit begin.
Right, so we've got now the Vitruvian exercise bench, which is sitting on the step that I was standing on before, with the bar, which Jace is now holding over his chest in order to do some push-ups.
I'm just doing the there it's on now. You can see it's on, can't you?
Yeah.
Now, the quicker I go, the more it resists. By adding speed, it adds resistance because it knows that I want more weight. And it will work within a percentage that I set. So it might add, say, 10% more weight if I tell it to, which is how, and how I tell it is by going quick like that. So it adds a bit more weight.
Now, I know you work out a lot, but what does the exercise fraternity say? What do, you know,
really
PTs say?
Okay, so I was initially a little bit cynical, you know, because I'm like, well, how does this work better than free weights? All I can say is that a lot of people that know an awful lot more about this than I do have reviewed this in glowing colours. They've got, so now, look, because it senses that I'm having an issue, look.
Made it easier.
Yeah. It's got rid of the weight because it can sense that I'm not carrying on with the reps. Like, there you see, now it's back in again. You see how it works?
Yeah.
It's a really intelligent, smart system. Just gonna put it behind me. So some of the biggest, thank you, fitness influencers in the world swear by this. In fact, the world's strongest man is an advocate of this. That's how much weight or resistance it can bring to bear. The strongest man in the world, he swears by this. I'm out of breath. I mean, even
even that, just that little set there is enough to, you know, get the blood pumping.
Yeah.
There's so many more exercises that you can do, from overhead pulls. There's a waist harness that you can put on, so you can add weight and resistance to press-ups or sit-ups. Or I mean,
really, so you work your whole body out with
whatever
this.
You can imagine. You can do on this in some shape. It might be in a different format to what you're used to in a gym, but you can do it.
How much does this set you back?
Okay, that's the only issue with it.
Because it looks expensive.
Well, it is. It's really well made. So it's made out of a big piece of aluminium. On top of that is a carbon fibre shell. What they've done is they've gone for the premium end of the market. Mm. Basic unit, entry unit, is £3,000 or thereabouts. The kit that I've got, the bench, some of the more premium items that you can attach to it, is around about £500 as an add-on. The app is free for the first 3 months, and then after that you have to pay, I think, about £300 a year. But you can do a lifetime membership, I think, for less than £1,000, and then you have to pay again. So I'm not defending that. I'm just saying that actually, if you were to look at that over the course of several years' gym membership,
yeah,
it actually starts to work out. And I'll tell you that having this at home has stopped me going to the local gym.
That, and also if you do buy workout kit for home,
yeah,
over a long period of time, obviously it would.
Well, if you were going to buy the gear that this can to do the same exercises,
you'd have to have multi-gym, wouldn't you?
You would. For £3,500, you wouldn't get very high quality equipment. So, you know, and I, you know, also even in the time that I've had it, which has been a couple of months, there's been a couple of software updates that have added some new features. So, yeah. No, I think it's fab.
So it's an amazing idea. Right. I was thinking you could maybe do the outro because I want to do something else. Yeah, is that all right?
Yeah. Anyway, thanks, guys, for joining us for another exciting edition of the Gadget Show podcast with me and Susie. Remember to check us out on Patreon. And if you want to get first dibs on the new podcasts, that's the way to do it. Extra content as well, behind-the-scenes stuff, Q&As, blah, blah, blah. Did I mention that Susie's standing on her head? Not quite sure why. Anyway, of course, if depending on which tier you choose on Patreon, you will also get the opportunity to come and join us in the studio and watch us record a show. Susie, what are you doing?
Saying goodbye.
Okay.
Namaste, baby.
Namaste. What does that mean?
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.